Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
Yes. Thank you.
The primary issue in this case is, of course, primary assumption of risk. And the key question arising with that regard is to whether or not the risk that resulted in Jessica Gregory's death was obvious. The answer, I believe, depends on how one defines the risk. The district judge said the risk was obvious because sliding beyond the boundary and impacting objects is an inherent risk of snowboarding. Thus, the judge defined the risk as sliding beyond the boundary, falling and sliding. I believe that was wrong. I believe the risk that led to Jessica's death was the risk of being misdirected into the backcountry by inaccurate signage and thereby being exposed to the hazards of the backcountry. That is not an obvious risk under California law. The Beninati case, that's the Burning Man case, it came out in 2009, says that an obvious risk under California law is a risk that is, quote, within the contemplation of the activity. It is not within the contemplation of ski resort users to be misdirected into the backcountry by inaccurate signage.
Let me ask you this. Even assuming the boundary was mismarked or the boundary was wrong, that area of the, what was it,
the High Beaver Traverse
was actually outside the boundaries. From reading the briefs, it appeared to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this would just be a technical error because, in fact, Alpine Meadows treated this area as if it were within the boundaries. They patrolled it. They reviewed it. They had signage that was consistent with their others. So even if it were, which is, I guess, a disputed issue, what difference does it make if the property was treated as if it were not backcountry?
Actually, the property was treated differently at the High Beaver Traverse. There was a critical way in which there is substantial evidence that Alpine Meadows treated the High Beaver Traverse differently than other portions of the ski resort.
Well, than other portions of the ski resort, but was it not treated at all as if it were backcountry? I mean, that seemed to be the issue.
One critical difference, it was treated as backcountry. The Alpine Resort ski boundary policy says within the resort, we give warnings of hazards. Specifically, the boundary policy says Alpine Meadows takes no measures within the out-of-bound area to warn or alert skiers or boarders to the hazards which they might encounter. Now, expert witness Stanley Gale presented a declaration. This is at page 298 of the excerpts of record, in which he said this. I'm quoting. During the 2005-2006 ski season, Alpine Meadows did identify cliffs and other hazards within the ski area boundary, both on its trail map and on the mountain for customer safety. It did not do so on the HBT, that's the High Beaver Traverse. That's the critical difference in this case. Alpine Meadows put no hazard signs on the High Beaver Traverse, thereby treating it as it treated out-of-bounds areas. That's the factual difference here.
So that's true also on the Beaver Bowl. Is that correct? Because further on in Mr. Gale's deposition testimony, it says there was no hazard signs in the Beaver Bowl. So is your argument that the Beaver Bowl is also outside the boundary?
No, the Beaver Bowl is treated as an adventure zone. And I believe that the patrons were warned, if you go here, this is what you are going to encounter, something very adventurous. They were not warned of that on the High Beaver Traverse. This was just simply a way to get from point A to point B with no warnings whatsoever. Another way in which it was treated differently is it was not groomed all the way out. Where Jessica fell was never groomed. Alpine Meadows groomed this traverse up to a point and then stopped the grooming, almost like an invitation. Here's a road. Go walk down it. No warning at all that the road's going to end, and then you're on your own.
So this was the this area, this High Beaver Traverse, your view is that unlike any other area, inbound area, that would be a traverse area, I guess, this one did not have the hazards marked. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes. There was substantial evidence to that effect, and it's what I just read from
Mr.
Gale.
And that was Mr. Gale's testimony?
Yes, his declaration.
Declaration, you're saying.
His declaration, page 298. It did not do so on the HBT. That's the difference. This was backcountry in that respect. No warning signs. No warning that there was a cliff off to the left.
What's the state of the record with respect to the difference between the conditions in the ski area that's adjacent to the area you're talking about and the backcountry area?
Well, the backcountry is utterly natural.
No, I understand that. But, I mean, in terms of the conditions that day, I assume that even if you had warnings, you still have ice on the conditions were essentially the same, correct?
Oh, the conditions where she fell was, I believe it was, it was firm with a very a crust with a very light layer of snow on top. It was as the Sierra often gets.
Yeah.
Cement underneath a little bit of powder. But she was in the backcountry and she didn't know it. That's the key to this case, I believe. She was exposed to backcountry risks without knowing it. That, under the Beninati case, is not an obvious risk.
Is there anything else in the record? I'm reading this paragraph 48 that you pointed to in your gray brief, and it says that during the 2005-2006 ski season, Alpine Meadows did identify cliffs and other hazards within the ski area boundary, both on its trail map and on the mountain for customer safety. It did not do so on the HBT. Is that the part of the declaration that you're pointing to?
Yes.
And is there anything else in the declaration or in the record that would say more expressly what you're telling us now, which is that Alpine Meadows treated HBT differently than it did any other part of the within bounds area?
I believe the boundary policy itself. This is the written boundary policy that's made available to users. It's in the excerpt of the record at page 66, and it says Alpine Meadows takes no measures within the out-of-bound areas to warn or alert skiers boarders to the hazards which they might encounter. And there's other evidence in the record that indicates they do warn of hazards within the ski resort borders. So combining the ski resort border policy with Mr. Gale's testimony, we end up with High Beaver Traverse being treated differently.
Okay, but there's nothing that says other traverses or other areas. This was the only area that wasn't, or is there something else in the record?
Again, from a declaration by Mr. Gale, the ski resorts commonly mark hazards within the boundaries and do not mark hazards outside of boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
That's a previous page of his declaration, so it would be excerpt of record 297, paragraph 42.
Well, what I took from the Goldstein deposition, you can kind of correct me if I'm wrong, is that I take your point that they didn't mark it with a warning, but from what I took from the Goldstein deposition is they just didn't open the area at all if the ski patrol thought that it was hazardous to the public.
I'm sorry.
The Goldstein deposition?
Yes.
And the Goldstein affidavit. What I took from that affidavit was that they may not have marked it, but they just simply didn't open it at all if the conditions were hazardous to the public.
Oh, yeah, it was open and shut. It was binary.
Yeah,
open
exactly.
Or closed, that was it. It was open.
So, I mean, as Judge Akuta said, I don't think there's a dispute about that they actually did manage this area in some fashion.
Yes.
In the same way that they managed the other part of it.
They patrolled it.
Yes.
They swept it. They decided whether to open and close it. There's one critical thing they didn't do. They didn't warn of hazards. In that respect, they treated it like the backcountry, and it was a hazard of the backcountry that led to Jessica's death, falling off a cliff.
Help me explain, because I seem to remember that the opposing counsel, or from the record, that there was a series of signs in the traverse.
Yes.
Indicating don't go past this sign. Is it your view that that is not a hazard warning, or what's the effect of that series of signs?
If Your Honor is referring to the signs posted on the tree that said this is the border of the resort.
There was a series of signs.
Yes,
was there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that was the inaccurate marking. Those signs were several hundred yards on the wrong side.
Right, but Alpine Meadow, whether or not that is the border or not, which is in dispute,
right.
Alpine Meadow treated the area on its side, it assumed was its side, as being part of the resort. And so it had those signs saying, don't, if you go past these signs, you're on your own.
That is true.
And so the hazard that should have been warned about wasn't, weren't those signs saying outside here, you're on your own? Because the hazard, I guess, here was the cliff, which was on the other side of those signs, if I'm reading the record correctly.
I think another way of putting that is if she had been in bounds and slipped and fallen and slid out of bounds into a hazard, would she have assumed the risk? I believe the answer to that question is yes. One could reasonably expect that sort of thing could happen in a ski resort. But she was not in bounds. She was on the other side of a boundary marker that means something. It means this is the backcountry. I don't think the ski resort can claim the protection of a skier being in bounds in a situation like this when there is substantial evidence that she was, in fact, out of bounds.
And you have about 4 minutes left. You want to reserve some time for
yes.
rebuttal? All right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. Paul Killian for Appellees, Alpine Meadow Ski Corporation and the Powder Corporation. Appellants characterized this appeal as primarily about primary assumption of risk. We look at this as being also about express assumption of risk and the release that Jessica Gregory signed in conjunction with obtaining her season pass. That release alone provides a basis to affirm the summary judgment below. Jessica Gregory did two things in that release. She expressly assumed all risk of injury or death from snowboarding in bounds or out of bounds. And second, she expressly released Alpine Meadows from all liability for her injury or death arising from her participation in the sport of snowboarding and her use of Alpine Meadows facilities regardless of cause, including Alpine Meadows' alleged negligence. And that applies also in bounds or out of bounds. So this entire dispute that they're trying to create as to the boundary is completely addressed in the express release. And California courts have repeatedly upheld recreational releases in the sports context.
Well, the argument, as I understand it, is if even if you sign a release, if you think you're going down a bunny slope and the in fact it's totally natural territory with all the hazards and nothing has been corrected, it may not be something that you've released, no matter how express your release is in that context.
Well, there's no case that supports that view in California.
I suppose, but, you know, I guess I'm kind of that view, too. It just seems to me that although California law has an extended tunkle to the sports context expressly, there seems to be the reservation that Judge Acute is talking about, that if you've got an unusual hazard, it's outside the scope of the release, which seems sensible to me.
Well, this is not an unusual hazard.
Isn't that the whole case? I mean, is this a usual hazard or not a usual? I mean, if it's a usual hazard, either a primary assumption of risk or under the express assumption of risk, you prevail. If it's an unusual hazard, as a plaintiff's claim, then it's different, right? Isn't that what the whole case is about?
Not as far as the application of the express release, no. And California courts are very clear that in the recreational sports context, express releases will be upheld. Here, it's undisputed. Jessica Gregory was an experienced snowboarder. It's undisputed she had hiked the Traverse before. It's undisputed she had ridden the Summit 6 chair to the top of this 8,500-foot ridge before. It's undisputed she passed a sign at the bottom of the lift that said the lift is not for beginners. In fact, she was on her way to double black diamond territory in Alpine Meadows. That's the most extreme territory on the mountain. And she also passed a sign, as Your Honor mentioned, that said firm conditions exist, a fall could result with an uncontrollable slide. And tragically, that's exactly what happened to Jessica Gregory.
What were the measures that were taken over the High Beaver Traverse? You're maintaining that this traverse was patrolled. You've talked about that and so forth. But Gregory is saying that, in fact, this was not treated fully as inbound territory.
It was treated, it was patrolled and controlled by Alpine Meadows, and that's what the purpose was of the operational boundary. I think the extent of the operational boundary is summarized best, frankly, from the plaintiff's key witness, Joe Gaffney, who said, this is an excerpt of Record 120, that the out-of-bounds area is the area where the resort doesn't maintain or control and peruse the area. And, in fact, it's uncontroverted that Alpine Meadows patrolled and controlled the entire High Beaver Traverse. Appellants argue that the High Beaver Traverse was not groomed. It wasn't supposed to be groomed. In fact, again, it's undisputed Jessica Gregory had hiked the traverse before. She would have known that.
Are there other areas within the Alpine Meadows ski area that are inbounds but not groomed?
Yes, there are. And in fact, Alpine Meadows has what's called adventure zones. And in fact, Jessica Gregory was on her way to this double black diamond area, these adventure zones, that are not groomed like a bunny slope. It's double black diamond territory. That's the sport here. It's a sport about people challenging themselves against the mountain.
But she wasn't doing that at the time of the accident. She was just trying to get over to the place where she could challenge herself. She was traversing. That's a whole different. To me, that's a different concept.
She was on her way to the black diamond territory, but the cause of her fall was the same kinds of inherent risks that exist no matter what side of the boundary you're on. And that's the problem with the plaintiff's case, and that's what the district court held. The problem with plaintiff's evidence is that even if defendants did not accurately mark the ski area boundary and they failed to adequately maintain the area that was out of bounds, these actions seem not to have increased the risks of the sport. The location of the boundary in this case is immaterial because whether Gregory fell within or outside the boundary, sliding beyond the boundary and impacting objects is an inherent risk of the sport. That inherent risk exists on either side of the boundary. That's what caused the death here. She was walking along the traverse. Eyewitnesses said it appeared that she dropped her snowboard. As she reached for it, she lost her footing, went down the slope, gravity did the rest, and she collided with rocks at the bottom. That risk, that's an inherent risk in the sport, and that risk exists on either side of the boundary. The boundary is really immaterial. And again, the express release applies whether Jessica was in bounds or out of bounds. And she released Alpine Meadows of liability for whether or not she was in bounds or out of bounds. And so she assumed the risk of injury whether she was in bounds or out of bounds.
So if I'm understanding your argument correctly, you're saying that the paragraph that opposing counsel is pointing to in Mr. Gale's declaration that the signage was different in this High Beaver Traverse is essentially irrelevant, whether it was or wasn't. You're saying that doesn't make a difference. Is that correct?
That is correct. And that's California's assumption of risk law. Under California's assumption of risk law, the Alpine's duty is not to increase the risks inherent in the sport. There's no duty to decrease those risks, and there's no duty to mitigate those risks. And a sign in and of itself isn't the cause of anything. It simply informs a patron about risks. But the risk that she encountered when she participated in the sport is losing one's balance, falling, sliding down a hill, impacting objects below. Those are the inherent risks, and those risks exist on either side of the boundary. They're the same. The plaintiffs, there's a problem with the plaintiff's argument here. On the one hand, they describe the traverse as dangerous backcountry, and they claim that Jessica would not have knowingly gone into such terrain. But on the other hand, it's undisputed that Jessica, in fact, had hiked the traverse before. It's uncontroverted in the record that her companion, Joe Gaffney, had hiked the traverse earlier that same day. And that's at Supplemental Excerpt of Record 72. And it's also undisputed that she passed a sign at the bottom of the lift that told her firm conditions exist. A fall could result with an uncontrollable slide. You know, part of the sport is being aware of the surroundings and the terrain. And that's stated probably best in the Solis case. Skiers, particularly experts, are or should be aware that slopes change either by natural forces or by man, and that skiers must ski with vigilance, alert to unexpected dangers. That is part of the sport. So that there was no obligation, no duty on the part of Alpine Meadows to put a sign up marking this cliff. And in fact, even plaintiff's own expert conceded that Alpine Meadows had no duty to mark cliffs that were out of bounds. And here it's undisputed that this rock outcropping was outside the posted operational bounds.
Were there special duties created by the special use permit?
Not with regard to posting any signs. There really were no. The special use permit is simply the lease between the Forest Service and Alpine Meadows. And nothing in the special use permit says anything about posting signs. It references, or it says that Alpine Meadows has to put a operating plan together that has to have a section on boundary management, but that's all it says. You look at the operating plan, it doesn't require the posting of boundaries. What the appellants are pointing to is an internal policy document called the boundary management policy. If you look at that, that does not even have a section that requires posting of signage. The other thing about the operating plan is it does not apply to Section 7, where this accident occurred, because that's owned in fee simple by Alpine Meadows, and it lists the sections it applies to, and Section 7 is not included specifically. I see my time is just about up. We ask that the judgment be affirmed.
All right. Thank you for your argument.
Your Honors, just briefly and quickly, the special use permit actually does require, I quote, this plan shall consist of the following sections in an operating plan, including boundary management. The boundary policy, which is made available to all skiers, says quite plainly, the ski area boundary is delineated by signs placed along the boundary. So the boundary policy is part of the operating plan, which is required by the special use permit, which is required by the federal regulation, which is authorized by the federal statute. So what we all get back to eventually is a violation of statute and regulation by virtue of mismarking of the boundary.
If the technical boundary was mismarked, is there any causation break there?
Well, unfortunately and sadly, Jessica Gregory is not around to tell us whether or not she would have gone there. But we do have Joseph Gaffney, who said, I don't go out of bounds without a probe, a beacon, and a snow shovel. And so I did not go out of bounds knowingly that day. If he wouldn't have she following behind him, it may be inferred, would not have. That's substantial evidence of causation.
So opposing counsel makes the point that, or he says, it's undisputed that she had traversed this area before.
Why should that make any difference at all?
Does that make a difference?
No. It's irrelevant.
So she knew what the risks were for this particular piece of land, whether it was in bounds or out of bounds.
No. No matter how many times she was out there, she didn't know that the signs were that the boundary was mismarked and she was out of bounds. That was the risk.
Though I guess your point, though, is if she had known that was out of bounds, she wouldn't have gone there. And
yes.
Yet she whether or not she knew whether the boundary was technically mismarked, she had already gone there and was aware of it. So the concern that I don't want to face the risks that are brought, the natural risks of out-of-bounds territory seems to be not present if she was familiar with that area.
No, because she had no idea it was out-of-bounds. And even if she'd been there previously, there was no indication that she was going out-of-bounds. If there had been a sign that said, from this point on, you're going out-of-bounds, Gaffney wouldn't have let her there. Because he did not have a beacon, a snow shovel, or a probe. He testified to that effect. She was with him. She was following him. It may be inferred that she would not have gone there either.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how many times she'd been there, if every time the steep area boundary was mismarked.
Well, I mean, I gather your argument is that, sure, she might have been there before, but the conditions were safe, so no one paid any attention to it. And, in fact, if it had been marked, she would have had the opportunity to go or not go.
She would have had the opportunity to make a choice,
yeah,
whether to be there or not.
I mean, the difficulty of this case, to me, that's a, you know, if we get past, that's a trial issue. I mean, if whether she's been there or not, this
yes.
is summary judgment.
Yes.
But the difficulty is that you do have conditions that are relatively, it seems from undisputed, that conditions are relatively the same, whether it's in boundary or out of boundary. And that would seem to be sort of the normal risk that falls in the primary assumption of risk here. That's the difficulty. I don't see any evidence that there was a shift, for example, like as you go across the boundary, that all of a sudden you had a fall that was unexpected or dead fall or something like that where you went through.
Right. The critical difference was not in the shift in terrain. It was the shift in the way Alpine Meadows treated that area. No warning signs. And no warning that there were no warning signs, more importantly. She knew in Beaver Ball, Estelle Ball, there would be no warning signs. She didn't know that here. There was no warning that there would be no warning signs. There were no warning signs. She had no idea. That's
is your contention that she treated this, or that rather that Alpine Meadows treated this as backcountry, and therefore she was misdirected?
To the extent there were no warning signs, yes, they treated it like backcountry. To that extent, they did patrol it, they did sweep it, they did open or close it, but they did not put warning signs of hazards, and they did not warn that you were in the backcountry. At least they didn't warn it properly. That's the difference in this case. And it's what makes it so unusual. This really is an unusual case. I'm confident in saying there hasn't been one like it before, and there won't be one like it again. This is unusual.
Thank you, counsel. The case just heard will be submitted for decision.